Philosophy is the attempt to say something about topics such as truth, reality, meaning, and the good, and to support these views by rational argument. It has been intertwined with theology, taken as the doctrinal part of religion, for 2,000 years and more. There have been and still are many debates within the various faith traditions, between the traditions, between atheists and believers, about God's nature and about whether God exists at all. Is the Son of the same nature as the Father, or just a similar nature? Can God be three persons in one? Is the existence of a supremely powerful and benevolent creator consistent with the suffering we find in the world? And so on and on. And if the human search for God is trying to establish by argument how we should answer these questions, philosophy has contributed plenty. But let's not go there. Let us start rather from another place. Many of those to whom their faith is important do not take it to be solely, or even mainly, the believing of some truths. Rather, having faith is a matter of adopting, together with others in a community, a way of life, a practice, a stance towards the world. To do this is not to deny the importance and truth, in some sense, of doctrinal formulations, but it is to give them some meaning, some role within the life of faith, which renders the intellectual debates less crucial. What does argumentative, rationally based philosophy say to this construal of faith? Perhaps it is believers going obscurantist, letting themselves off the hook of rigorous probing. But perhaps not. Philosophers have various views of concepts and truth. Here are two options. Consider first the concepts of natural science. Copper, for example, or moon of Jupiter. Starting from them, we might take concepts to be labels, which we have because we want to specify what reality is constituted of, independently of us. And it may seem that we have, with these concepts, indeed grasped pretty fully the nature of at least some of these constituents. Concepts thought of this way are, I shall say, closed. That is, in having them, we have a clear, sharp, complete picture of what is required for being copper or a moon of Jupiter. It follows that with a question like, is there a moon of Jupiter made of copper? The interest is not in what the world is going to be like if we find we can say yes. We know in advance what it will be like. We will find a largish lump of reddish electricity-conducting metal circling Jupiter. The interest is only in whether there is such a thing or not. So truth or falsity for a claim conceived this way depends on the existence, or non-existence, as the case may be, of the required corresponding state of affairs. Consider now some other concepts, such as table, food, clothing, music, and so on. These, by contrast, invite us to see them as open. Let me illustrate using table as an example. We have the concept because in living our lives, we find ourselves with certain concerns or projects, certain desired directions of travel, so to speak, in which a table might be useful or important. So we want somewhere to put a plate on while we eat, somewhere to sit around while having a meeting, and so on. The openness of the concept lies in this. Our grasp of what it takes to be a table is not clear, sharp-edged, complete. Our experience may indeed give us some particular picture. A solid, flat surface supported on legs, for instance. But this idea does not exhaust what a table might be. There may be other and surprising ways for a table to be present for us. We may find a surface suspended from the ceiling, for example. And there is openness also in that, on occasion, we may not know whether or not something is a table. Does this elegantly flat and polished old tree stump count? So what of truth when we are applying such an open concept? Does openness mean that truth becomes subjective? We can say what we like and so on? Not at all. If we posed the world a question, is there a table here? The world will, on many occasions, give us a completely determinate answer, no ifs, no buts. And when the world does not give such an answer, about the tree stump, for example, that does not mean that we can say what we like, but rather that we need to clarify what we were really asking about. What the openness of the concept does mean is that what is at issue when we ask, is there a table here, is not whether the world contains an instance of tablehood, where that is imagined to be a possible constituent of reality with a determinate nature independent of us, a nature which we might grasp completely in advance of investigating for its presence. Rather, the issue will be whether the world will allow, support, enable whatever table-related concern or project we have when we ask the question. And let's remember that we need to be sensitive, ingenious, and open-minded as we look to answer the question, since if the world does allow, support, or enable our project, perhaps it will be in an unexpected way. Some philosophers, including myself, are inclined to think that no concept answers to the ideal implicitly held out by the closed model, and that even closed-seeming concepts are actually somewhat open. But however that may be, the interesting question for us now is about the concept of God or the divine. Is it more like copper, moon of Jupiter, or more like table, or music? If we take the first option, we suppose that we already grasp clearly what is required for there to be a God. For example, there needs to be a being who is omnipotent, omniscient, omnibenevolent, a transcendent creator of the world. And we will suppose that these terms too are closed, that we understand them clearly, and then off we'll go into the familiar arguments. But suppose we take the second option. God would then be a concept by which we probe into the world both the immensity around us and the responses within us, hoping to find something which answers to our God-related concerns, searching for something which might provide a basis for acting or attending or orienting ourselves in such a way that some enriching or God-related developments of life are not stymied or aborted, but are enabled to move forward. And what concerns or projects might be God-related? Where and how does God come into our thinking? God is invoked in connection with the practical life, which poses difficult choices. So can we find a deep source of guidance in practical perplexity? God is invoked also in trouble and distress, because the things we care about, ourselves, other people, ways of life, are threatened and lost. In the face of suffering, change, and death, can we become aware of a source of strength and comfort? But also, as conjured in our first reading, the world is not all perplexity and bleakness, but is immense and rich. Everywhere we look, there are amazing things far outrunning our understanding, through or in which some sense the presence of God. Is there a proper focus for awe or even gratitude for our being part of all this? Fortunately, it is not my role to answer these questions or explore how they might be related. The only point of these remarks has been to suggest that there are philosophical views about concepts and about truth which are hospitable to a non-dogmatic, exploratory view of faith, as in our second reading from St. John. To be vividly aware of our finitude, of the value of community, to think of faith as a way of life and not a set of dogmas, may not be a cop-out, but perhaps how any search for God should be conducted.